episode of the Retro Asylum podcast is brought to you by the man, the myth, the legend. He is our very own forum moderator, Darren. Thanks very much, Darren. Hi guys, this is Andy from Retro Asylum Podcast, and this is the pre-announcement to the podcast. Now, sometimes things happen which, during the editing process, I've got to edit in, so I just thought I'd let you know what's happening. This is the second podcast I've had to do. The first one I recorded a week and a bit ago just didn't work, and what I forgot to add into this podcast is that Swainy recorded like a little review, his view basically on the Vectrix app. So somewhere on the podcast, I'm going to put in Swainy's point of view on the Vectrix. Apart from that, guys, the show, it's all about Mega Drive pickups. Enjoy it. Thanks. Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 27 and a half. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me today is no one. It's just me. Now guys, I'll quickly explain the reason why it's just me today, and I'll quickly tell you why I'm doing this podcast a little bit late. I'm sort of setting myself like a little record of mission, basically. Now, originally, we record these couple of episodes like at least a week and a half in advance. Now, during the editing of episode 27 and a half, I actually listened back to it and I just didn't think it was quite what I wanted. Now, I recorded the show with Glenn, but it's just one of those things sometimes that certain shows don't work. It was no one's fault or anything. It's just like maybe we're a little bit underprepared or we weren't enthusiastic. I know I certainly felt tired, and it was just one of those things that it just didn't work. And by recording this podcast every week, I always try and produce something which is, I don't know, 100%, you know, quality. And I didn't want to let it slip because some new listeners, it might be the first podcast that they've listened to, and they might think, you know what, it's not that good. So I decided to scrap it, and I've been trying to find the time to actually record another episode of the show. And it's just been really tough, actually, just really been trying to find the time. So anyway, let me quickly tell you what we've got planned. So first of all, we're going to tell you a little bit about what's going to happen on the show. We've got some announcements. Got the main topic of the show, which is Mega Drive pickups. I'll tell you a little bit about the competition, and that's pretty much it. This is only a half show, so the show is only going to be about 30 to 40 minutes, and I'm going to basically try and edit it all within about an hour and a bit. Now, the show, hopefully, if it does come out today, is today's Sunday, and it will come out on Sunday. It's not going to have all the sort of little fading in music, fading out music. It will have a little bit of music, but not as much as it normally does, because I'm really determined to have this show. Right, so first things first then, let me tell you a little bit about what I've been up to. Now, because I do shift work and I've got a baby on the way, real life is really hard. It leaves hardly any time for gaming. But luckily, I had one free day last week, and it was really nice because Swainy, my co-host, came over, and he's recently had a baby. So, you know, big congratulations to Dean and Carly for, you know, the birth of their baby, George. You know, they're all doing amazing. Dean's absolutely over the moon. And it was great that Dean, you know, he had a little bit of time. He came over. He brought over the N64, which is the prize that we'll be giving away. And originally the plan was for us to sort of record some 8-bit wars. You know, it's a series I first started on YouTube years ago where I compare the Spectrum, Amstrad and the Commodore 64. And we just had a few issues with that where I don't think I was enthusiastic. I was in the mood to do that. Again, certain ROMs weren't working. My laptop kept on crashing and so on. So it didn't quite work out that way. But what it did make me realize is there's just something missing about gaming nowadays. Now, don't get me wrong, online gaming and modern gaming is fantastic. It's convenient. You can sort of like see who's online, ask a friend to join in and play these games. But when I grew up back in the day, it was either you'd go to the arcades, you'd meet your friends there, and you'd play a game, you know, maybe from start to finish with only about, what, 20p or 50p. And it was amazing, you know. Arcades was like a bonding place. And then you had the home computer system and consoles. And, you know, you'd have a friend come over and it was fun. And that was one of the best things about last week. It was just nice having Dean over because we had just gone, we went out to the chip shop. We bought some, you know, chicken and chips, got a Diet Coke. I got a normal Coke and it really made me feel like I was my early teens again because it was the smell of chips and vinegar and stuff. And then we decided to play some games. I'll tell you what was great. Dean basically decided to show me what I was missing in Double Dragon because in the last show we talked about what was better, Double Dragon versus Streets of Rage 2. And the Twitter debate has really sort of like got a bit crazy. You know, loads of people disagreeing, agreeing, arguing and so on. And I'll be completely honest with you, there is no right or wrong answer. Both games are truly amazing. Both games are fantastic at what they do. Dean still prefers Double Dragon. I still prefer Streets of Rage 2. But I'm not blindsided by my love of Streets of Rage 2. We were playing Double Dragon on MAME. And because Dean is such an expert on Double Dragon, you know, he's programmed it. Well, not programmed, he's done the graphics on the Spectrum remake and so on. And he's always had some involvement with Double Dragon. That it really opened my eyes and gave me a whole new experience while playing this game. So it was kind of like having a director's commentary on a game because as we were playing, Dean would point out all these little things like the graphics on the Beetle that on the remake, the Beetle, you know, that poster on the wall is different. And then maybe they did that for copyright. And he talked about like the characters, about the sprite on a Bobo, how it's on the old original, you know, Spectrum game, it looked very, very different. Whereas on the remake of the Spectrum that is being made, it's very, very close to the arcades. And we talked about all the special moves. For a start, I didn't know that in Double Dragon, you could sort of like give the guys a full Nelson while the other guy could hit him and so on. I didn't know you could actually throw them. I had no idea you could do that. The other thing I didn't know that you could do was like a kick items, like a barrel. I always thought the only thing you could do with the barrel is pick it up, chuck it, and hit someone with it. But no, if a barrel's lying in front of you, press the kick button, and it rolls towards them. And that works with all the other heavy objects. And I was, like, completely amazed because for years and years I've played this, and it opened up my eyes and I experienced a whole new side of the game. And like I said, Double Dragon is one of my favourite games ever. We got right down to the end. Dean was telling me all his little secrets and so on. Things that you could do, little bugs. And we got to the end and we had to face against each other. And yeah, Dean pretty much kicked my ass. He really did. He sort of like beat me and he got the girl, which was Marion. And I really enjoyed that day because, you know, it was nice sort of having someone there who's roughly my age and we played these games that we were so passionate about as youngsters. It's a great experience. So that's what I've been up to. Another thing I've been up to is I've been organizing other guests that we're going to get on the show. So that is something that I'm looking forward to. We've got a few good guests lined up and it's something that's going to be interesting over the new year.
Hey everybody, this is Buzzbot from Oddpod and the Free Bees Podcast. You're listening to the most greatest, funkiest retro gaming podcast in the world, Retro Asylum.
Right, so let's move on to site news and announcements. Now the first bit of site news I'd like to talk about is I think about a week and a bit ago, I got an interesting email from the Oliver Twins, and they basically, the email said, "You've asked me before about Dizzy Returns, I've got a little bit of information for you, I'll give you the heads up, whatever you do, don't release this information until 7 a.m. of this certain date," and basically this game was Dizzy Returns. So yeah, it was really nice that they gave us the news on this. And I was really excited about it because I'm a big fan of Dizzy. It was a great pleasure interviewing the Oliver Twins last year. Amazing people, you know, but that's why they've succeeded in the business, because not only are they good at what they do, they're genuinely nice guys. And what they've done with Dizzy Returns, for some of you guys that don't know, they started a Kickstarter campaign. Now, Kickstarter, for you guys that don't know, is like a way you can sort of like raise money to fund a project. Now, what they're trying to do, I think they're trying to raise $350,000. That is their goal. It's a large number. And so far, they've managed to sort of raise, wow, it's incredible, 21,000. And 88 pence. Now, they've only got 19 days to go. Now, I've got to say, guys, I urge you guys to contribute whatever you can, because this game will only be made if the Oliver Twins can raise this amount of money. And Dizzy, I've seen what they've been doing with it. The graphics are completely... They look amazing. Now, this isn't going to just be like the last remake they did, which was Prince of the Yokefolk, where they re-released it with just like a done-up graphics. And don't get me wrong, I really loved that game, but it was a short Dizzy game. It was a short adventure, it done well, but this is a whole new Dizzy game. Now, it's got a bunch of different modes, which I think I might be correct in this. Maybe some of you guys can let me know. But okay, so brand new adventures, loads of puzzles. The graphics look very similar to Rayman stuff. There's some very interesting concept art if you go to Dizzy Returns Kickstarter page. Because every so often they release some info on the game. Now, from what am I aware as well, there's lots of hidden things. There's like retro-y style graphics thrown in if you unlock and so on. And there's like different sort of things for you to do. So it is going to be an amazing game. I really hope this game does get made. I mean, there's only 19 days to go from when this podcast comes out, and I really hope that they do manage to do it. I mean, you get different amount of things for the pledges. Let me give you an example. If you pledge £10 or more, what you'll get for that is you'll receive a Kickstarter exclusive digital copy of Dizzy Returns for the PC, regular backup backer emails, updates, including developer diaries, meet the team interviews, and video updates. So let's look a little bit further higher up the scale and see what you get. So if you pledge over 5,000, you're basically a monarch of Dizzy. You can claim your rightful place in Dizzy Returns. Alongside the game team, you'll design and name the lost princess and a character who will appear in the important quest. And you'll also be taken out for dinner with the Oliver Twins. So I'll tell you what, it's just something that it's absolutely amazing. I really recommend that you do help fund this project, basically, because Dizzy was such an iconic character on the ZX Spectrum, and he really did sort of like, he is an 8-bit icon on the Nintendo. You've got Mario on Sega, you've got Sonic on the 8-bit home computers, you've got Dizzy. And we've only got a few more days to carry on with this. You've got 19 days to go. And if you can contribute £10, that'd be fantastic. Every little bit helps. So please, if you know if any of your work colleagues that are into Dizzy or remember Dizzy, send them a little email, send them a link, send them something on Facebook. They've got something on Facebook, which is a Dizzy Returns, and it tells you a little bit more about it there. And yeah, why not just put £10 towards Dizzy Returns? It's a great project. I certainly will be doing it when I get paid. Right, so next up is another Kickstarter campaign. This is, I think, being done by Retrofusion. And what they're actually doing is, this is by project by Chris Wilkins from Retrofusion. Another great retro gaming website, by the way. Now, it's for a book. It's The History of Ocean Software. Now, for all you guys that remember from back in the day, Ocean were like an amazing company, and they released some of the best games out there. Like, all of you should remember Daley Thompson's Decathlon, Hunchback 2, Mr. Wimpy, and who can forget, especially on the C64, all the Ocean Loaders. The Ocean Loaders were amazing. Now, you know, people like me, poor Spectrum owners, you know, we weren't treated to sort of like amazing musical masterpieces while the game's loaded. All we got was just like sort of that static, hissing, colory line thing while the game's loaded up for 10 minutes. But on the C64, if it was an Ocean game, you got some amazing music, which was just completely out of this world. So let's quickly do a little bit of research on this. Yeah, so the history of Ocean will unfold the story of Ocean, exploring the company's origins, its employees, their games, their music, and the iconic artwork that placed the company at the forefront of the gaming industry for over a decade. Now, what's really interesting about this, guys, is that the book is being written by Roger Keane. And Oliver Frey is involved as well. Now, for those of you guys who sort of, the name rings a bell, you know, Roger Keane and Oliver Frey. Now, these are the guys that created the Crash and Zap magazine and Emtex. So, you know, Roger Keane, he's going to sort of write it. And I'm sure he's going to do an amazing job on this. And Oliver Frey, who can forget all the amazing artwork that he used to do for these things? So, again, I would definitely recommend you do this Kickstarter. So go to Kickstarter, look for the History of Ocean Software. Now let's have a look and see how well these guys are doing. Their goal is 12,000, and I think that's like a reasonable target really. And you know what, guys, they've managed to raise £9,605. But the thing is, guys, they've only got 12 days to go, so we need to make this book happen. So again, guys, if you can dip into your pockets, let people know, go into other forums and tell them about this amazing project, because you know what, I completely support the hard work that Chris Wilkins is putting into this, you know, because he's obviously passionate about retro gaming. He wants to spread the love about Ocean Software. Loads of people want to hear and read about that story, so I think it's a book that certainly deserves to be made. Right, so one more thing about Retrofusion. I haven't got too much info on this. What it is, they've got like a retro gaming event happening at some point. Now, again, because I'm doing this, recording this on the day as the podcast is coming out, I haven't had enough time to research it, guys. But I'm sure if you go to Retrofusion, I think it's .co.uk or org, but just type in Retrofusion, then retro gaming will come up. And I'm sure somewhere there, it will tell you a little bit about their retro gaming event. Me and the guys from Retro Asylum would definitely love to go, and I think it's something to definitely check out. And because these guys are so passionate about retro gaming, it's definitely worth checking out.
Hi, yes, you join me down at the Retro Asylum Gaming Shed, where I'm currently checking out Vectrex Regeneration on the iPhone and iPad. First of all, if you've got an iPad 1 or an iPhone lower than an iPhone 4, then unfortunately this app will not work on your devices. You need an iPad 2 or newer, or an iPhone 4 or newer. Okay, so let's quickly talk about the Vectrex itself. It's a vector-based console that was first released in 1982 by GCE. It was later brought to Europe and redistributed in America by Milton Bradley. Sadly, in 1984, the games crash happened and Milton Bradley was bought out by Hasbro, yes, those who make the Transformers, and they discontinued the machine. So only about 28 to 30 games were ever released for it. But most of the games are great and they're highly recommended by us at Retro Asylum. So, the app, well, basically it is a Vectrex emulator. The Vectrex, as I say, is a vector-based system, and I've always said that emulation will never do it justice. Am I right or am I wrong? Well, I'm nearly proven wrong. This is a great emulator. Unfortunately, there's a few issues, and there's one that probably won't be solved, and that is the fact that the original hardware featured an analog joystick, so at least one of the games, Hyper Chase, isn't playable on an arcade device. Now, let me get on with the controls. Touchscreen controls, as we all know, can be a nightmare. So if you're just getting this for the iPhone, you're probably not going to get much out of it, because unfortunately, the controls suck. There's no other way around it. Again, if you've just got an iPad, there's a bit more space on the screen. Some of the games are slightly playable, but again, you know, they are a bit tricky to use at times. However, having said that, if you've got an iPad and an iPhone, you can link the two together and use your iPhone as a controller. It's still touchscreen, but there's a lot more space on the screen when you do this, and it works really well, especially on Hyperchase, because the controller actually acts, it emulates the analog controls, so that way it is fairly playable. But if you've got an iCade, the rest of the games really work very well. So far it's only Hyperchase that I've had a problem with because of the lack of an analog stick on an iCade device. Other issues, Mindstorm on level 2, at the moment there is a problem with it. It will crash and go a bit funky and spaz out a bit. It does correct itself and you can carry on playing, but that is something that will annoy many people. The developers are aware, and that will be solved on the next update. The other thing to note is that the game Spike, which was a Donkey Kong clone, on the original hardware it features speech. On the emulation, the speech is sadly missing. Will that be added? I do not know. But other than that, emulation is really, really good. It's an impressive app. There's some footage of Vectrex adverts. There's plenty of information. It's just very nicely presented. So I'm going to just boot up Mindstorm so you can hear the Vectrex buzz and that spooky music. Yep, Retro Asylum recommends this, guys. As long as you have got an iPhone and an iPad or an iCade, because otherwise, obviously, the controls are going to put you off. But other than that, it is great.
Right, so let's move on to our competition. Now, to win an N64, you've got three chances and three ways of winning an N64. Now, the first way, it's nice and easy. If you haven't already, or if you have, leave us an iTunes review. If you have left us an iTunes review, hey, you're already entered into the competition. The second way is, like our Facebook page. That will enter you in the competition. So if you've done two of those things, you've entered twice, which is amazing. Now, the third way is a little bit more difficult, but it's fun and challenging at the same time. So it gives you an opportunity to enter the third time. And the way you do this is throughout this podcast and the previous one, and up until episode 29 and a half, I'll be mentioning this competition. And what will be happening is I'll be playing three tracks. Now, if you know what those three tracks are, email me at andy@retroasylum.com. And once again, you're entered into the competition. Now, the competition will be announced on episode 29, the winner on episode 30. And I'll try and post it ASAP as soon as it gets done. And yeah, it's a great prize. It's an N64 control pad with about five or six games. You've got Jet Force Gemini. You've got the famously, notoriously bad game, Superman Returns. You've got Gauntlet. You've got a copy of GoldenEye in there. And I think there's even a Rumble pack thrown in there as well as a few other games as well. So definitely worth a prize. And what I will do, I'll post a picture of it on Facebook over the next couple of days and on the website. So yeah, let's play that first music track and see if you can do it. If you know what it is, guys, email me at andy@retroasylum.com. Now, next up is Mega Drive pickups. Now, this is the main topic of the podcast because, again, I want to keep it relatively short because it is a half show. And these half shows, what I do is I do something different that we don't normally do. Now, I've recently started collecting my retro games systems again. And because I've got a baby born in the next few weeks, it's going to be difficult for me to actually buy anything new. So I made a point of treating myself one last time. And I've got myself some really cool stuff. Now, I bought myself 2 Mega Drives. Each Mega Drive cost me about, £10. One was about, £13 or £14. The first Mega Drive I got didn't have the power pack. It didn't have the TV aerial. And it didn't have a control pad. But these were things that I actually had previously anyway, when I had these consoles, and luckily, you know, they were at my mum's house. So again, £10 for a Sega Mega Drive one is fantastic. Now, I want to talk a little bit about it, because I noticed there's something on the forum. Someone mentioned that they wanted to start a collection. Now, the Sega Mega Drive, the reason why I would suggest you do collect the Mega Drive is it's a great machine, and on eBay the games do go for a relatively cheap price. You can get games for anywhere between $1.99, $3.99, and obviously the price goes up, but I've managed to get like 14 games that are absolutely amazing for no higher than $3.99. The Mega Drive one is a system I'd recommend that you go for. It's a beautiful looking system. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, you know, the Knight Rider car. It's just slick, sexy, you know. And Mega Drive 2, I had to get myself one because I thought, why not? It's nice to have like another backup Mega Drive. And it's a lot cheaper. It feels a lot more flimsy. It's a lot more lighter, because obviously I think they had removed certain things on it. Technology had moved on there. I noticed it doesn't have the headphones socket, so you can sort of just plug in your headphones to it. I don't think it looks as nice as the Mega Drive 1. But the Mega Drive is a superb console. In our future podcast, me and Glenn are going to be doing a 16-bit wars. We're going to be comparing it to the Super Nintendo. I think we've got like about, 14 games or 12 games that we've picked. And we're going to compare and see which one is the best system. Again, there is no right or wrong answer. It's just difference of opinion. And it's nice to have an intelligent debate where it doesn't get all childish and all. So yeah, Mega Drive 1, let me tell you about some of the games I picked up. Bear with me, let me bring up this information here. So first up on my Mega Drive collection, and this is in no particular order, these are all the games I've picked up for the Sega Mega Drive, is Echo the Dolphin. Now, Echo the Dolphin was a game very different to what I'd experienced on the Sega Mega Drive as a youngster. And it's a game that I never really quite got into until recently, until I started playing it briefly on my Sega Mega Drive. And I'll be completely honest with you, my Mega Drive is actually in the shed. I haven't really got time to play it. So the way I have been playing it is via emulation on my PSP on the journey to and forth from work. So it's a great game. Now, basically, in Echo the Dolphin, you play this dolphin, I guess his name's Echo, and what it is all your friends just suddenly disappear with this mysterious wind thing. And it's a nice, interesting game, because you don't go around sort of like shooting things, you don't go around blowing up things, it's not a platformer. It's sort of like a little swimming sort of puzzle game, where you sort of like push things, you speak to other animals. It's a really interesting game, and I don't think there has been another game quite like Echo on any other system, really. I mean, at the time, the Mega Drive was famous for its arcade conversions or sort of Sonic games, and this was just a different take. It's a great game. The graphics look very, very nice. It controls very, very well. There were a number of different sequels in this particular game, and I think there's a version on the Dreamcast as well, which I've always wanted to play, but I never managed to play it, so I might pick that up at some point. And I think it also came out in the Game Gear. But yeah, Echo the Dolphin's a great game, and I'm looking forward to investing a little bit more time on it. And I think I only spent about, $1.99 on this game. So again, if you want to start off your Mega Drive collection, I can't say, you know, like, don't get this game, because it is a great game. I know Swainy's not a fan of it, but again, for $1.99, you can't go wrong for that. Right, next up is Flashback, subtitled The Quest of Identity, for Identity, I should say. Now, it's a game, I think it was published by US Gold, but it was actually done by Delphine Software. I think the original game first came out on the Amiga, and it was ported over to the Super Nintendo and Mega Drive, and I love this game. It's sort of like a follow-up to Another World or Out of This World, depending on what region you're from. It's a great game. It really is. It's sort of like a platformer, puzzly game, but it didn't use your standard 2D style graphics. It had like a 3D sort of like sort of look about it, and the animation is completely out of this world. It is superb. Now, if you thought Prince of Persia, the animation on that game was just awesome, the animation on this game, you know, is wow, it's so much better. Now, what I like about this game, just like in Prince of Persia, the controls are a little bit bizarre. You know, the way it moves, it doesn't control like a Mario game, which I always thought was a little bit difficult to begin off with. You know, the controls do get a little bit of getting used to, but once you've done it, you've mastered them basically, and it does become second nature. And I always liked this game because it kind of had elements of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies like Total Recall or The Running Man. Now, let's start off at the beginning. At the beginning of the game, you wake up in a jungle and you don't know where you are. And you find this little cube thing that tells you, you know, like what's sort of happened, and that's all you go by. And then you've got to try and sort of like leave this jungle. And throughout this, you go to different locations, and there's one amazing level as well that you need to raise enough money to actually go somewhere else. But so what do you do? You need to get yourself a job, and so you end up entering this competition, which is like the Running Man. And I see what it's. I wouldn't say it's a huge game. I'm sure you can finish it in a couple of hours, but it's the experience, all the little touches like music, little cutscenes. Just out of this world, and it's something that I hadn't really seen on the Sega Mega Drive before. And maybe I should talk about this slightly on the next episode that I do with Glenn, but I prefer the Mega Drive version over the Super Nintendo version. I think the colour scheme, they just keep it nice and simple, it looks pretty well, whereas the Super Nintendo, I think, was a little bit too colourful and just took away some of that sort of graphical look of it by overpowering with a little bit too much colour. But it's a great game, absolutely fantastic. Now, next up, I want to talk a little bit about Jimmy White, Whirlwind Snooker. This was another game I picked up. I think this cost me $2.99 off eBay. Now, once again, this is another Amiga port. And I tell you what, I loved this game. Now, I never ever actually owned an Amiga back in the day. Just there was always one kid that had an Amiga. And I remember going to his house and he put this on. And I was like, oh my god, this is out of this world. It's completely, totally amazing. It's everything's proper, sort of like 3D. The whole table can rotate. You can view it from. You can change the angle of the view. So the controls take a while to get used to, but oh my god, it is absolutely amazing. It's even got a trick shot. It really has. Now, since I haven't played the Amiga version ages, the Mega Drive version probably is a lot tougher to control than the Amiga version, but the gameplay is still there. Once you've mastered those fiddly controls, the game does become second nature. This is probably my favourite snooker game ever. I was going to say, actually, Steve Davis Snooker on the ZX Spectrum is my favourite, but I think that's more a nostalgia sort of thing. If I was to play both of them now, I'll probably actually get more playability from Jimmy White World 1 Snooker. And again, it's a great feel. It's even got some little things of animation as well, where the little snooker balls sort of like stick the tongue at you and stuff like that. So it's a great game. And again, for the price I paid for it, it's absolutely amazing. Right, so let's talk about the next game that I picked up then. It is Krusty's Super Funhouse. Now, this is a game I hadn't really played. I probably rented it out back in the day. Obviously, it's a game based on the Simpsons license. You control Krusty the Clown. And the only way I can describe it is like a simple version of Lemmings in a way. Because basically, you play Krusty, your funhouse has been infested with lots of little mice, and it's up to you to sort of like get rid of them. And a few familiar faces show up, like Bart Simpson. He's one holding the machine that kills all the mice. And what you've got to try and do is basically, it's like the mice keep on walking in one direction, and the puzzles are relatively simple. So say, for example, you get like a little block, you place it down, the mice will walk up this block, and they can use it as a step. You can block a pipe, or you can use it, and there's loads of little things like that. And it's kind of ingenious, actually. When I first played this game, I thought, oh, it's really basic little puzzle game. There's not much to it, but it's got that sort of let's go back to it again, sort of factor for it. The animation's nice, the graphics are nice. It's a good use of a Simpsons license, actually. Back in the day, you had games like Bart versus Space Mutants. You had Bart's Nightmare or Virtual, whatever. And they weren't really that good. I think the only good Simpsons game, apart from this, was the Simpsons arcade game. And sadly, that wasn't converted to either the Mega Drive or the Super Nintendo, which is a real crime. But Krusty's Super Funhouse is a great game. And again, paying under $3.99 for it was a real bargain. And I'm kind of glad that I actually got this. Alright, so next up is the Mega Game Collection number 1. Now, this comes with 3 games, actually. And the reason why I got it is because it comes with 3 games and it's relatively cheap. I think I paid $1.99 for this, and this is boxed as well. I don't think it came with any instructions. Now, the 3 games you get with this is World Cup Italia 90, Columns, and Super Hang-On. So, let me quickly talk a little bit about World Cup Italia 90. It's not a great game. It's below average. I wouldn't really play it to single player. I think it's the sort of game, if you have got a friend over and, you know, you just want to kill about 10-15 minutes, you can play this and I'm sure you'll get some of enjoyment on it. The graphics aren't that fantastic. It's no sort of like FIFA, it's no ISS soccer, it's no sort of sensible soccer, I should say. It's just an average game. Now, the games that I would say that are pretty good in this is Super Hang-On. Now, I was a big fan of the arcade game of Super Hang-On. I really loved it. I thought Super Hang-On was a great game, and I've got some great memories of this in the arcade. And I think I played Hang-On mostly on the Master System, more than the Mega Drive, actually. And the Master System version came bundled with the Master System. It was one of the free games that came inside it. It was a great game, and playing this recently just shows you how amazing, how close the Mega Drive did with the early arcade conversions. It's a great arcade conversion, and if you play games like, say, like Space Harrier or Afterburner, all look and have that very arcade feel, and this is no different. It's a great game. It's tough. I'm not very good at racing games. It's a tough game. Alright, but I think the next game that I'm going to mention in this collection here on the Mega Games collection is Columns, and wow, it is so damn addictive. It's a puzzle game similar in style of Tetris, but it plays very different. It's more like Connect 4. You get these little coloured diamonds or jewels, and you line them down. You get four or a couple in a row, basically, and the things disappear. Now, I remember playing this game so much, and I played this so much that even when I closed my eyes, I could hear that music in the background. I could actually see the little coloured jewels, and it's a fun game. It really does work fantastic, and this also came out on the Game Gear. Sega Master System was another great conversion. I love the Mega Drive version, and it's best played in 2 players. It gets really competitive. Towards the end, with all the thing colours on the screen, you end up feeling a little bit blinded, basically. Recently, I've been playing this on my PSP, because like I said, it's hard for me to play all these Mega Drive games, because they're in the shed, and real life gets in the way, and I can't bring my Mega Drive out, put it on the TV in the front room, because, you know, my wife's there, and there's loads of other things to do. So I play all these games on the commute to work, and I think Columns was just mind-blowingly fantastic. It's a great sort of like portable game to play, and if I'm correct, it's also available on the iPhone, so definitely worth checking out. If you haven't got a PSP and emulation, get it on the iPhone. Right, so let's look at the next game in my pickups. I think I've got a few more to go, and once I've done this, I'll round the show up. Actually, before I go on to the next game in the collection, let's play another of those tracks. Now, if you want to win an N64, here is the second track that you got to try and guess. If you know what it is, email me at andy@retroasylum.com. So hopefully you guys know what that is, and if you know what it is, that's giving you another chance to enter into the Win an N64 competition. Right, so my next Mega Drive pickup is Mega Swiv. Now, I'm going to be completely honest, maybe I'm being a little bit, I don't know, uninformed in this particular game, but I was really disappointed with this. Mega Swiv, I thought it was just going to be an arcade port of, well, you know, not an arcade port. I thought this was going to be like a port of the Amiga game and the Spectrum game of Swiv, because I know the Super Nintendo version is exactly like the Spectrum version, but obviously with better graphics and colour. This game feels more like a remake or remix, which it possibly is, but it just didn't grab me. Maybe it didn't grab me as well because I was only playing one player, and the way it works is one of you control a helicopter, the other player controls like a little jeep, and you go around the levels shooting things. The jeep can go underneath bridges, the helicopter has to fly over certain things, so it has got that element to it, but this didn't capture me like the Super Nintendo version or the ZX Spectrum version. It just didn't feel right. So yeah, again, I can't really complain. I think this game was only $1.99, was unboxed. Now, then the other game that I still haven't played, I mentioned this previously in the podcast with Swainy, was Mick and Mech, Globo Gladiators. I haven't played this game yet, guys, but from what I've heard, it is a really great game. It's a nice little platforming game, and it's one of the games I hope to play over the next few days on the way to work. Now, next up is I got this boxed instructions, and again, I paid $3.99 for it on eBay. Now, how amazing is that? Stupidly, I bought two copies, but luckily the other day when Dean came over, I gave him just the cartridge of one of the games, you know, Revenge of Shinobi I had. Revenge of Shinobi, great game. Absolutely fantastic. It's one of the earlier Mega Drive games, and it's still probably one of the best Mega Drive games, and I'll tell you why. Now, I mentioned this to Dean, and Dean's like, well, it doesn't quite feel like Shinobi. Don't get me wrong. It's one of these games that you have to sit down and play, because when I first played this game, I wasn't a fan. I love the arcade game Shinobi. The best Shinobi game I thought at the time was the Sega Master System version. And this is Shinobi, but on a grander scale. It's superb. Now, what I love about this game is the Shinobi gameplay is still there. It's very, very intact. You know, you can sort of like shoot your ninja stars, you can jump up to the next level, you can duck things, you collect things like you did. But what I like about this game is the music, the environment. For a start, let's talk about the music. The music is some of the best music I've heard on a Sega Mega Drive. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure it's the same composer that composed the music for the Streets of Rage game. So he's a great composer, and the soundtrack's amazing. Now, one of the interesting facts about this game is it features some interesting bosses. Now, I haven't got far into it to discover these bosses, and I think I've got the PAL version, which I don't think comes included. But you fight against some of the bosses like Godzilla, you fight against like baddies like Spider-Man, there's even Batman. But I think it's only in the Japanese version that they did it, because I think something to do with licensing, they couldn't really do it. So in the UK version, I don't think you fight against Batman. But I'm sure you can find some videos of it on YouTube where there's people playing the Eastern ROM version, basically. But it's a great game. It's probably in my top 10 Mega Drive games ever, that. Now, next up is Road Rash. Now, I was a fan of Road Rash back in the day. I played Road Rash 2 absolutely loads because that was split screen. It was two players. I never really played Road Rash 1. Road Rash 2 was going a little bit more expensive. I think it was about $5.99, $6.99 on eBay. So I decided to pick up the Road Rash. Again, it's boxed. No instructions though, for about $2.99. And I tell you what, it's a great game. And playing it recently made me realise that there really hasn't been anything quite like it, apart from obviously the later Road Rash games. And it's a game that's crying out for a remake. It's a game that's crying out to be done on the Xbox Live Arcade, or, you know, the PSN network, whatever it's called. It's a great game. I'd love to see, even if it's like a remake of these games HD'd up, I'd be more than happy. Now, what I like about this game is, like, on the Mega Drive, you either just got racing games where you had to sort of like just race forward, maybe occasionally turn left or right for different routes. Yeah, so basically, like on the Mega Drive, you got certain, most games like you just go forward, occasionally there's a different route going left and right. But what I liked about Road Rash was that it did something very, very different. What it did different was that, say for example, you're racing down the road and you get attacked by one of the other bikers or you get hit by an oncoming car, your guy will go flying off his bike, and what happens there is he'll pick himself up and he'll start running towards the screen. And that's just something you hadn't really seen on the Sega Mega Drive, because most Mega Drive racing games, you just go in one direction, which is forward. There's none of this coming towards sort of like the TV screen sort of thing. And it's a great thing, which I hadn't really seen on, you know, any Mega Drive games at the time. Now, guys, like I said before, you know, it's a great game, Road Rash. Not as good as the second one, but still, nevertheless, it's fantastic. You know, everything's there. Atmosphere, graphics, playability. And I'd certainly love to see this game come back again. Right, so let's quickly talk briefly about the other games. I'm going to talk about Robocop vs. Terminator. And once I've done that, I'll mention the competition, how you can win the N64. Right, so Robocop vs. Terminator. It's a great game. It features Robocop. It features Terminator. I think it's based on the Dark Horse comic series. It's something to do with how Robocop gets involved in this Skynet war and he's got to take on the Terminators. It's a great game. I'm not explaining it very well here, but I love it. It scrolls from left to right. You play the role of Robocop and you've got to shoot thugs. You've got to shoot the baddies, which end up turning into, you know, sort of like robots. It's a great game. It really sort of like draws you into it because it starts off nice and easy, and then the game, by the time you reach the fourth level, it's unbelievably hard. It really is. Now, what I like about this game is the overall look about the game. It really sets a tone. It kind of feels sort of like the Robocop series, like the films, and it kind of captures the sort of 80s feel of the first Terminator. It's really amazing. I mean, the graphics are nicely drawn. When you shoot the baddies, they explode into balls of blood. That's if they're humans. You get to see you get to see Ed-209 from the Robocop series. You get to see the exoskeleton of the T-800. You get to see the Terminator as sort of like Arnie with the leather jacket and the spiky hair. It's really great. It really captures the atmosphere of both the movies. There is a version on the Super Nintendo. It's not as bloody as the Mega Drive version. We will talk about that on an upcoming podcast. But yeah, this game is truly amazing. It really, it's fantastic. It's definitely in my top 10 games ever. I just wish I was good at it, you know? It's just damn tough. Right, so the final track on how you can win this competition. Once again, guys, if you want to win an N64, there's three ways you can do it. iTunes review, like us on Facebook, or guess all three tracks on all the shows I'll be playing from episode 27 up until 29 and a half. The winner will be announced on episode 30. This is the third track. If you know what it is, email me at andy@retrosylum.com. So I've got four more games lined up and then I'm going to round up the show. First up, Sonic the Hedgehog. Wow, great game. Reason why I say wow is because before that, Sega's mascot Alex Kidd, he really wasn't, you know, up to it really. He really couldn't take on Mario. Don't get me wrong, Alex Kidd, interesting game, interesting character. I think Alex Kidd basically peaked on the Master System on Miracle World. Guess Alex Kidd in Shinobi World was pretty good as well. Then along came Sonic the Hedgehog, and he instantly became, you know, a mascot for Sega, and you can see why. I don't think they knew how great this game was going to be, because originally this game was going to be ported to the home computers, to the Amiga, to the ZX Spectrum, Amstrad, and Commodore 64, and it was going to be ported by US Gold. And in a way, I'm very glad that didn't actually happen, because I don't think, you know, we would have got Sonic and Sega, you know, to where it is to this day. Sonic, great game. It's not as complicated, as say, as Mario. The first Sonic game kind of feels like the first Mario game, where it's literally you run from left to right. Now, the whole difference about Sonic, which made it unique, which was the speed. You could run really, really fast. So the levels are designed for fast running gameplay. I wouldn't say it's as tricky as Mario, the first few levels, actually, because you run around, you go around the loops, you got to collect the emeralds. It's fantastic. Problem is, though, that whole fast running gameplay does go out the window towards the level once you reach under the water, because you can't really run under the water because it slows you down, and it becomes more platformy, and it slows it down a pace, and it loses that whole sort of like fast-paced game which it's all about. And don't get me wrong, I love Sonic. I think Sonic's amazing. You know, it's a great game. The next one I'll talk about is Sonic 2, which is another pickup. I got this, I think, for about $1.99 unboxed. Won it on a bid. Great improvement. Beautiful music, beautiful graphics, two players, split screen. You've got the little 3D section when you're running towards the Chaos Emerald. I think great improvement on the game. And I think this is where Sonic peaked. Sonic 3 and Sonic & Knuckles really didn't do it for me. It didn't really progress as much as the Mario series did, which is a real shame, because they could have done so much more with Sonic. And since then, I think Sonic's slowly been going downhill. It hasn't been as good as previous Sonic games, really. This, I think, is the best Sonic game ever. I just love it. The overall look, the music, like I said before, it's got a great feel. All right, next up again, it's a game that I'll be talking in an upcoming podcast with Glenn. It's Street Fighter 2 Special Championship Edition. Now, this is a game that I didn't think was possible on the Sega Mega Drive. I think this was like a 24 meg cartridge. I know it was on the Super Nintendo. It's a great game, actually. Great conversion. Now, you've got to bear in mind that the Sega Mega Drive could only use a certain amount of colours on screen at a certain time. The sound chip wasn't as good as the Super Nintendo sound chip. So they do sort of like ruin it a little bit, but not too much, because first of all, graphically, sprites, they look equally as good as the arcade counterpart. Like I said before, they're not as colourful, but they're all beautifully animated. They all move like the way they do in the arcades. The scenery's all there. The music's there. The music sounds pretty good. I think where the audio is a bit of a letdown, it's when it comes to the sampled speech. It sounds very staticky. It sounds very muffled. And beyond that, though, I think the game's pure perfection. It's probably one of the best Mega Drive games ever. And the next podcast we record with Glenn, we will compare it to, you know, Street Fighter 2 Turbo on the Super Nintendo to find out which is better. But I think this is an amazing conversion. I think it plays just like the arcade game. Now, it only really plays like the arcade conversion, like the arcade game, if you've got the 6-button control pad. Because before, I think, this game and Mortal Kombat 2 came out, you only had a 3-button Mega Drive control pad, which I don't think it worked, because you'd have to switch between strong and weak and medium, and it just ruined that gameplay. But with a 6-button control pad, it works amazingly. It works fantastic, actually. It's a great game. And in this version, which, like I'll mention in the next podcast with Glenn, you don't have to enter a cheat to play fast, because this game moves at an incredible pace, really fast. It's ultra slick. Right, so next up, my last game that of my Mega Drive pickup is World of Illusion. I'm going to talk briefly about this because I've talked about it before. Mickey and Donald, I think this was the third in the Mickey and Donald series on the Sega Mega Drive. The first one was Castle of Illusion. I think the second one was Quackshot. And this one combined both the characters. It's a great game. It plays differently that in one player than it does in two player. Set pieces are different. And I love the way you can team up with this. I really can't wait. Like maybe next time, like Swain can come over and we can go through this game together, you know, in two players. It works so well in two players. Don't get me wrong, it's not like a bad game. It's just incredibly over and done with very quickly. But while it does last, it's a great experience. It's very beautiful. It's like a Disney cartoon. The music's out of this world as well. And I love all the little touches of this game. It's one of my favorite games ever. It's got a real special place in my heart because it just looks amazing to this day. I'm still impressed at how amazing it looks. So yeah, guys, I'm going to round this podcast up, actually. I'm sorry if I've been rambling on. The podcast we had recorded, which was meant to be episode 27.5, just didn't work. It didn't feel very natural. There's loads of awkward pauses. It just lots of mumbling. I know I might be doing that now, but I still think this is better than the one we recorded. And like I said, sometimes certain things work, sometimes certain things don't work. Now, what I would like to say, guys, is please spread the word for the Retro Asylum podcast. You know, leave us an iTunes review because that really does motivate us. You know, doing these shows weekly is tough. It really is tough, especially with having so little time to do it. You know, like family getting in the way, work and so on. And by just leaving us an iTunes review, if we see that sometimes, you know, it really makes us happy. I'll text Swainy will text me, or we'll text Glenn. And it really makes us sort of think, wow, you know, people are listening to this. We get positive feedback and it inspires us to, you know, create, keep on doing these shows. Don't forget as well, we've got a Facebook page as well. You can like us on Facebook. Check us out there. You can follow us on Twitter as well. Twitter is RetroAsylum1. I've got a YouTube channel, which is Locomaniacs, 1HMPS. That's the official channel for Retro Asylum. And yeah, why not check out our website? We've got site news. We've got reviews. We've also got a forum as well, which is a great community. I can't speak highly enough about our community. It's all very, we're all very adults. There's none of this sort of flame wars going on. There's none of sort of people going, oh, you suck, or anything like that. It's all very intelligent. There's debates going on, and I love that. And everyone is passionate about retro games. It's a great experience, you know. I think the forum runs itself, basically. So, yeah, check us out, retroasylum.com. See you next time. Goodbye.